This is the Pittsburgh section, National Council of Jewish Women. I am Leonard Bellow. My partner in crime is Martha Fleischman, and we are interviewing Richard Rao. Richard, where do you live?
I live on Highland Avenue in the Shady Side section of Pittsburgh. Father's name is Solomon Rao. My grandfather is Enoch Rao. My father is Richard Solomon Rao, and I'm Richard Enoch Rao, so four generations. And if I ever get married, it will be a whole different name. Come up with something new. I mean, after all, four generations of this.
Well, what can you tell me about your immediate family? Mother, your father, you had no siblings, I understand.
No, I'm an only child. My mother went to Carnegie Mellon, what at the time was called Carnegie Tech, and she graduated in 1933. I think it was 33, either 32 or 33. And she met my father while she was going to Carnegie Mellon. He at that time was a businessman. He worked at Bankers Lithographing Company, which was at that time under Forbes Field, literally within the stadium, but on the bottom part of the stadium. And they met and they dated for 3 years, and in 1935 they married. Now, my mother at the time had just gotten out of Carnegie Tech and was kind of a freelance actress. But at the same moment that this is all happening, my father, along with other civic leaders in Pittsburgh, formed the Pittsburgh Playhouse. And in 1934, a year before they got married, the Pittsburgh Playhouse began, but not in its present site. It first did plays at the Arnold School over on Braddock Avenue, and then it moved a year later in 1935 to the present site, which is over on Craft Avenue and Hamlet Street in Oakland. And that year as well, as I just said, is my parents got married. My mother acted at the Pittsburgh Playhouse from 1934 through 1972. Her first show was Art and Mrs. Bottle by an English playwright named Ben Levy, L-E-V-Y. And her last play was 40 Carats, a comedy. In between that, and I don't really have the numbers, she did quite a lot of plays, as you know. Going through the entire decade of the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and in the early 70s. I was born in 1940, so that was probably one of the few times she had to take off a little bit. But she went right back into it and acted constantly, mostly in comedies. And was a very fine actress. And I, as her son, picked up the thing in the 60s and began acting, and have continued acting ever since, up to the present, 1994. My last production, matter of fact, was Driving Miss Daisy at the Playhouse in July of, June of this 1994. I played the son, Lulu.
Let's see, the Bankers Lithograph Company, did they do something like printing checks?
Yes, exactly.
Did they have any other, was there anything else involved in the...
Not that I know of. One time, my father thought that I'd be interested in going into the business, so he took me on a tour of Bankers Lithograph Company, and I just saw a huge like a warehouse with a lot of printing you know, presses, and I thought, this isn't for me, I'm not interested. He was mad at me for that. But it seemed to me they just printed checks and passports, and it was a rather flourishing activity. His partner was Willoughby Jacobs. When he came into the firm in 1932, there was a third partner, so to speak, and he died very soon after, so that my father and Willoughby were really the co-owners of this company, though my father was really a vice president of that company. And he continued in that until his death in 1954, at the age of 60. He used to say that his real love was theater, and that his the business of being a banker, just the graphing, was a side thing. But this really was the thing that kept him going, and it provided the income. But he also, in a story which I found almost impossible to believe, but apparently it was true, my mother, prior to her illness, when she was unable to function the way she used to in the early 80s, told me that when they first got married, my father wanted to move to New York, and she didn't. And I grew up thinking the opposite. It seemed logical, a young woman in her 20s would want to go off to the big city, and a man in his 40s would not. It was the exact opposite. And the reason she didn't want to go was because she wanted to keep ties with her family, and she didn't want to leave Pittsburgh. And also, she was doing pretty well here. She was acting in all kinds of things. She had entered national radio competition and won. She did a lot of radio stuff. Much later, did more radio stuff with WCAE, the old radio station here in Pittsburgh. So that my father, for whatever reasons, I don't know what he would have done in New York, wanted to go there. I seem to have picked up the genes, and I want to live in New York, but I have yet to do it. I keep talking about it, and I have for 10 years, because I love New York.
New York is a rat race.
It is, and it's expensive, and it's very difficult to... But I keep going up there, and I keep loving it, and I keep coming back to Pittsburgh, and I keep thinking, how am I going to do it? It's not the best way to make decisions, but that's how I've been doing it. Anyway, I have no idea. We never talked about it in the family after that. My father never brought it up, but my mother felt that I should know about it. And she did something she held back from me. She just felt it was an amusing little thing, and I was so surprised by it. My father... had friends in New York, one of whom was George Gershwin. And Gershwin, according to the family lore, I don't know if this is true or not, they double dated one night in New York City. And Gershwin also, this was a true story, I don't know if that last one I just told you was, but it seemed like maybe they did know each other, because I have a picture autographed to my father, and since my father's name is Dick Rao, and I'm Dick Rao, it says, to Dick Rao, with fondest affection, George Gershwin. So I thought, I'll hang it up in my apartment, and people think it's from George Gershwin, unless they figure out that Gershwin died in 1938, and I hadn't even been born yet. When Gershwin came to Pittsburgh with Oscar Levant to play at the Pittsburgh Symphony, this was in 1930, I'm not sure about this, it's 34, 35, my grandmother sent a letter to Gershwin inviting him to come visit her house, and she lived on Bartlett Street in Squirrel Hill, and I have the letter also. And Gershwin sent her a letter back saying thank you, he would do it. So after the symphony that night, he played with the Pittsburgh Symphony, did Rhapsody in Blue. He and Levant came over to my grandmother's house, which is around here somewhere on Bartlett. My grandmother had two pianos, a grand and an upright. And Levant sat at the upright. Gershwin sat at the grand. My parents told me this story. And played all evening. Can you imagine being in a house and listening to this? I just got it. And Gershwin missed his train back to New York. So he was having so much fun, and so he stayed on another day and caught the play at a train the next day. And I just my mind cannot take that in.
Yeah.
I just thought it was amazing that they...
Yeah, it's, I mean, such talent all in one room.
Yeah, and my grandmother did this often. She often entertained many kinds of different guests, notable people. And my parents then carried that on later. When I was growing up in Squirrel Hill, they would have people like Brooks Atkinson from the New York Times, and they had Roberta Peters, whom they became very good friends with, and Leopold Stokowski, the famous conductor of God knows how many other people, because I, little boy Dickie Rao, was too shy and scared to go down to these parties, so I never met any of these people. It's a, I can't help you on that. It's just that I, it was amazing. But my grandmother apparently really got into it and made so many friends in so many different places. It would be difficult for me to even begin to explain to you all these different connections. One of her connections was Teddy Roosevelt, who she visited. And there's a picture of her and Roosevelt, well, in a group of people. But my favorite picture of all, the one I keep in my... collection is of her and Amelia Earhart. Earhart came into Pittsburgh in 1927, and my grandmother was chosen to take her around the city in an open car. And there's a picture of the two of them standing. It's an incredible picture. I love it. And my grandmother had the habit of putting on the back of portraits pictures, all the information, so she has the entire itinerary of that day and the reason that Earhart was here. Just amazing. But anyway, my grandmother did a lot of that, and my father and mother continued the tradition. One of my father's close friends was George S. Kaufman, the playwright, and I'm sorry to tell you this, I can't really describe this, it would be great for this project you're on. George S. Kaufman and my father were incredible practical jokers. And they pulled a fast one on my mother when she first was married to my father. She told me the story, but I cannot remember it. It was in New York City. Kaufman had invited them to his penthouse apartment. This is after he had written a number of big hits like "The I Sing" and "Struck Up a Man." And if I could remember the story, I'll tell you sometime. But I can't. My mother was still angry. It was late as the early 80s that they pulled this fast one on her. But this is the kind of milieu I grew up in. My father was a very well-known businessman in Pittsburgh. He had contacts all over the place and was well-respected in that respect. My mother was an actress who was developing a reputation in Pittsburgh. I think could have made it nationally, but felt happier here and because of her family. My grandmother at that time was still alive, Bertha Florsheim. Her presence was not as significant when I was born because she was getting sick and had some long illness which lasted until 1952 when she died at 87. My grandfather had already died in 1919 at the age of 62. He, sort of a side issue here, was city councilman on the city council for about 9 years. 9 or 10 years, I'm not sure. And was the first person, according to what I understand, to suggest the subway in Pittsburgh. And everybody said, that's impossible, you can't do that. And of course, we have it now.
All three stops.
All three stops, well, whatever that, yeah, whatever that is.
You know, it's funny, I'm still on the first question. there was so much to your immediate family. What about your home life in your early years? Was there, what about religious?
Well, we're Reformed Jews. We were all members of Rosh Sholem, and my grandfather, Enoch's brother Marcus, apparently was head of the temple at one point. There's a big plaque with his name up there, Marcus Rao. He died the year I was born, and apparently there was some involvement. My involvement was very limited. I went to religious school, but I didn't like it, and I was confirmed in 1956, and I never went back, and then I decided for various reasons 2 years ago to join the temple for the first time as an adult member, and I've been a member ever since. But I'm not, I don't think the background of the family was particularly religious. My parents, I know, went to the services, but I didn't want to go, so they didn't make me.
What about Bar Mitzvah?
No, we didn't. Rosh Hashanah didn't have that.
Oh, that's right.
They started that later, I think in the early 80s, if I'm not mistaken. Just as well. The confirmation was bad enough, and I had enough trouble with that. But I did speak one line of Hebrew, I remember that. I did it correctly. I was terrified, but I did it.
How about your school days?
Well, I went to Shadyside, I went to Shadyside Academy from the time I was in kindergarten in 1945 through when I graduated from Shadyside Academy in 1958. And it was a pretty good background. I then went to the University of Pittsburgh, where I got my master's, my BA and MA in English Lit. I think the Shadyside was a very good background, but at the same time, it was a very hard school to be in, especially if you're single, you know, an only child, and your father has died when you are 14 years of age, and it makes it real tough. And you're in your middle of your teenage years. So I really didn't do very well for a long time there. And then in my last year at Shadyside, I began to improve. And in a class of 55 students, I was ranked 50th. And a year later, I was ranked 10th. So I made a big jump and graduated with all kinds of awards and stuff. And my grades moved up, and then I moved to the University of Pittsburgh, where I did very, very strongly and graduated Phi Beta Kappa in 1962 and magna cum laude from Pitt. So I really caught on there. And while I was at Pitt, I formed the radio station, which is still in existence now. It was then called WPGH. I think it's now called WPTS. And I was, I have to say, I was responsible for it because I stayed with it when it went off the air for the first time in 1958 because they couldn't figure out how to put it on the air. And it took me 4 years to figure it out, and I had people who told me how to do it. And I surrounded myself with certain people who said, this is how we'll do it. And in 1962, we went on the air, January 8th, 1962. And I was the disc jockey, and I played a song called "Swonderful," George Gershwin. And the station still exists today. I don't know. I think they're FM now. We were AM. 700 on the dial. And so my schooling, basically starting at Shadyside and running through Pitt, went from 1945 to 1962. Then I went to graduate school at the University of Pittsburgh, where I was there until 1968. Now, I got my master's in 64, and I started working on my PhD, and I kept at it. And then in 1968, I got tired of it, and I quit. So I'm what is called an ABD, all but dissertation. I have everything but the dissertation, and it was going to be on Mark Twain, a book called Pudd'nhead Wilson. But I never did it. I never finished it. Some of the faculty are still there. They still remember me. But I didn't.
What can you tell me about the, you know, the life of in the city? When you were an adolescent?
Well, nothing much. I mean, I can't. You mean what's
or
specific?
Or going up to the present.
You mean what I've done?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. After I quit college, graduate school, I got a job at the Playhouse as film director. Now, what this meant was that I was in charge of distributing film calendars and being there in the evening to make sure the ushers did the right thing, but I did not program the series. And I did that for a year, and I got sick of it. I mean, it wasn't really, here's a person with a master's degree, what is it, the hell is he doing this for? So I quit, and then I got a job teaching part-time at Robert Morris Business College, English composition. Now, Robert Morris is a business college, but they also have a humanities department, and I worked my way into full-time teaching there. So beginning in 1970, I was teaching 5 courses a week at Robert Morris. I would be teaching English composition. I taught speech. I taught drama, a lot of drama, but nothing on my major, English literature. And I did this until 1975. In the middle of that, the Playhouse folded. And I was asked to join the board of the Pittsburgh Playhouse in 1973. So I tried to help to keep the Playhouse afloat, but it didn't work. And in 1973, the Playhouse went out of business officially. And in 1974, it was declared officially bankrupt with no assets. And I continued teaching at Robert Morris, and then I quit and drifted around for a while, and then suddenly, without much fanfare, I was offered the job in 1978 of film director at the Playhouse, the job I held until this summer when the Playhouse film series was canceled by Point Park College. And I continued doing that from 1978 straight through to 1994. In that period, I programmed 4,800 and some odd films and turned it into a very successful, I thought, citywide event. But Point Park College didn't think so, and so they terminated it. So all this time, between 1978 and the present, that's what I've been doing. In addition to which, I, of course, have been traveling to New York a lot and acting. And my acting career began in 1966. At the University of Pittsburgh. I did a play called A Man with a Flower in His Mouth by Luigi Pirandello. And a one-act play, not very well known. And then I graduated from that to working at Chatham College in occasional productions. And then I went to Little Lake Theater, which is out in the Canonsburg area of Pittsburgh, where I began acting there in Star Spangled Girl in 1969. I went to the Playhouse for the first time to act in 1970 with the same play, Star Spangled Girl. Worked there until the present, 1994, when I did Driving Miss Daisy. Some of the plays I did during that period, I did You Can't Take It With You in 1973, which was a highly successful production. I did a play called Last the Red Hot Lovers, which became a very big deal for me. I did that in 1979. I did a play called at the Playhouse called That Championship Season. And then one of my biggest, most favorite hits of all was Little Shop of Horrors, a musical which just everybody loved. And there is a possibility, I'm not making any predictions in this room today, that I will be on the stage once again in the fall doing that production at the Pool for Gargaro Productions. And I also serve on the board of that theater company. So at the Playhouse, I've done a few plays, not a lot, and then at Little Lake Theater, I've done about 25. All comedies, stuff like Played Against Sam and A Thousand Clowns and The Odd Couple, and my most recent play at Little Lake was Barefoot in the Park. I happen to like Neil Simon. I think he's very good, and he's great for actors. Absolutely magnificent. His lines are gold. I've had my biggest laughs for Neil Simon.
See, I read something somewhere about Meyer Burger and Nat Elbaum working on reviving the Playhouse sometime in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Were they...
Well, I don't know.
Are you familiar with their involvement in that?
Not really. I mean, I'd heard a lot of talk about it, but the Playhouse, as we all knew it, died in 73.
Yeah.
When Point Park College took over the building, they've essentially run it as a college program with professional theater, but even that has been cut back.
Yeah.
So the Playhouse, whatever it is, truly doesn't exist, and anybody who tried to get it going it seemed to me to be doomed. They may have, but I don't know them. I don't know that.
Well, I think at the time they were successful, but
maybe. Since, yeah, right.
So. Incidentally, I saw you in Little Shop of Horrors. I enjoyed it very much.
That was a wonderful show. It really was. Kids loved it.
Adults love them.
Yeah, no, sure, I know. People love to see me being eaten, and eaten alive in the second act. I get eaten up. Crazy production.
Okay, well, you did tell us about your education after high school. Are you married?
No, single, all my life.
All your life.
Doesn't look good. The prospects are grim, I'll tell you. As of today, nothing. Don't know. I'm still looking for it. If you have any prospects, let me know.
Get the network going. Well, you've told us about your career, and we can see the influences which led to your career.
Yeah, I think my identification with my mother was pretty strong. I mean, when I was, I think, about 6 years old, my father, who was then the head of the Playhouse, he became president of the Playhouse, actually in 1947, and he was always involved in the Playhouse, both as on the board and as treasurer and secretary and whatever, and he became president of the Playhouse. This is the heyday of the Playhouse, when it had as much as 12,000 subscribers and the best restaurant in town, you know, that sort of thing. And he took me to see my mother in a play, and I'm not sure whether it was the Barretts of Wimple Street. Maybe that was it, I don't know. Anyway, I saw her for the first time in my life, I guess, then, and I was, of course, thrilled with the magic of theater. And later my mother would take me to see children's theaters, the old Shanley Theater, which then became the Park Shanley, which then now becomes the Hillman Library. All on that property where the property is. And I used to love to watch children's theater. And the Playhouse became the place where I went to see my mother do all kinds of things, and I just... I guess fell in love with it. But I don't do much theater, that's interesting. Which is the reason we go back to New York, because if I'm really going to do this properly, I should go to New York. I'm Equity, I'm SAG, and I'm AFTRA. So I'm all three unions. I'm all set. And all I have to do is get in there.
Can you tell me any more about your mother's involvement with the Playhouse?
Well, I think the one of the things that has been said about this whole business of her involvement, and I will tell you what other people say and then tell you what I think is the case. The media in Pittsburgh and others that I've talked to have said the same thing, that my father built the Playhouse for my mother. It seems a normal, natural occurrence. Here's a man who is 42 years of age, falls in love with a 23-year-old woman, marries her, and then suddenly there's the Playhouse where she acts. But it didn't really work that way. What happened was that the coincidentalness of their marriage plus the beginning of the playhouse, and yes, she did get parts there. You know, it didn't hurt that she was the wife of one of the founders of the playhouse. But the fact is that things didn't work out the way they should have for her. For example, in the first 2 years of the playhouse, a man named Herbert Galindre, who I think at the time was a teacher at Princeton University, came to Pittsburgh to become the director of the Playhouse series.
Could you hold it just a minute?